Where are we, Mr. Bassett? Are you waiting on us, or are we waiting on you?
I'm not too sure how you want to proceed today. We've sort of left off in the committee last time after having heard the judge of the Supreme Court of Appeal and a legal aid board, so I'm not too sure.
Is it possible to deal with the public sector issues next week? This guy, I would have liked made a contribution, and I've, as I said, got leave for a doctor's appointment.
All right. Mr. Bassett, my apologies to you. All right. Can we do that, Honourable Minister? It's processed for next week. How we will proceed and such public protector's investigation. Next week is committee. Sorry, Dean. So sorry. I know the body is saying I must rest. I must go to the beach. I must have lots of wine. And yes, but sorry, we have another week off this week. All right. Mr. Jeffrey and then Ms. Shepherd.
I thought we had discussed it. I think it had been informally and agreed on it that we would call the Deputy Public Protector to go through the documentation she's put before us, mainly because, I mean, I think we need this year to have started to do something rather than just leaving it all next year. And to my mind, the appropriate place to start would be the Deputy Public Protector, because she's leaving at the end of the month, so she's leaving in a few days' time, and I don't know where she's going, but technically she could not be available, and just go through the documentation that she has submitted. And we maybe then assess at the end of that, ask her questions and things, ask for where we think there needs to be more information, and at the end of that, we assess where we want to go with the issue. So it's not to try and complete it, but just to take the first bite and see what it tastes like, as it were. I thought we had agreed, Chair, and it might have been informally, that the meeting would be open. Ms. Schaefer, I know, has sort of said that wasn't her understanding, although I think we may have discussed it informally, but I think that's an issue we need to discuss. Mm-hmm. I would feel it should be open, in that I think the danger, I think that the Mail and Guardian article is a topic on its own. And Chair, again, I think from the Justice Committee that you should write or do a statement that asks that it gets printed in full in the Mail and Guardian. And what I objected to in the article was it was stated as an objective fact that Parliament was going to roast the public protector, and I thought that was absolutely appalling. In that, you know, it might be a assumption on behalf of some people, I'm not sure who. I don't think the media likes the word roast when we effectively perform oversight. And I don't think ever roasted the public protector, and I don't think it's our intention to roast her on this one. So I think that fact that was put out that should be corrected. And I think that if we do decide to go for an open process, that we explain why. And I really get baffled a little bit with the contradictoriness of media in that, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. I mean, remember how where they were so upset with us closing magistrates' matters, where we then decided, okay, we'll just open it. So I think it's better that as much as possible gets aired in public, so they're not dependent on leaks. So then, in short, what I wanted to suggest is that we invite the deputy, we invite them there for Tuesday. I mean, Monday is not a normal committee day. We shouldn't meet if we have to. That sounds all right for my DA colleagues. We invite the deputy public protector. We inform the public protector that this is what we're doing. We maybe invite her to send a representative, but tell her we're not expecting a response. The response will come later, and I wouldn't have thought it appropriate for her to come herself, because then she may want to respond. So if that can maybe be conveyed. And lastly, that then a response is given to the Mail and Guardian.
Sorry.
I don't recall us agreeing that it was going to be, a blonde. We said we were going to look at the paper to see what the issues were, and then we were going to decide how to proceed. I don't have a problem with the suggestion. I agree that in principle everything should be open, unless there's extremely good reason why not. And as far as I recall on the openness issue, we did say that if we did have anything, it would be open. I say for the if people were whistleblowers and needed protection, that's what we discussed, and I think we stand by it. Our point of departure is that much should be in the open as possible. I don't understand the Madeleine Gloria's article because she's saying that lies are being held closed behind closed doors, and then she's disclosing all the complaints in the newspaper article in any case. So there really is no point in having it behind closed doors because the issues are all out there anyway. So I do think I am slightly concerned about inviting the deputy to go through all the documentation in a sort of unstructured way, because a lot of the stuff is really administrative and very pernickety and very petty, quite frankly. It is pernickety and it's petty, and it's administrative and management issues. It's not fundamental issues to the Office of Public Protection. But perhaps what we could do is, I'm happy with Tuesday, I think what we could do is, perhaps if we offer come, just ask her to please limit herself as far as possible to, sort of main issues. And then we can, I don't know about not asking her to come. I think she should have the right if she wishes to come. It might be better to, we should say it may be advisable for you to send someone on your path. That's fine. So they can at least know what to do. But it probably wouldn't be advisable. I mean, it might just create more indebtedness. But I think generally that's probably in order. And we can decide from there what we do with this issue.
There will be some repetition, but in these circumstances, as we don't, I think that repetition is best placed was very firmly on the record. During our discussion last time, which was very tentative and during which we came to absolutely no conclusion on whether we would do an investigation, how, and the like, I certainly said that it is for us a matter of principle that one observes openness, and I'm the one who said perhaps in the case of a whistleblower, and the identity needs to be protected to protect her against him or her against occupational detriment, we may close the doors. And I couldn't be more surprised by the Mail and Guardian article. The assumption from which it's written is that meetings should be closed. Now this coming from a newspaper, but in the media in general, who the last time the committee was closed, communications, when Ms. Mazibuko served there for us, the media camped out and squatted on the ground outside. So at what point did the basic principle change? I found that whole article strange, and I'm sure we'll deal with the responsibility. And then just to say, I find an exercise like this is tedious in the extreme. The chairman last time noted, I can tell you over the years I have received these voluminous complaints from the staff at various Chapter 9 institutions. They are frequently petty, personal, vengeful. It's very difficult. I'm not convinced in my mind that we should go through this whole thing. And I did touch to you the case of the Father Osmar sexual harassment complaint committee, which did close its doors. I was always surprised at no complaint, but which did not go to the merits. They did not attempt to go to the merits of the complaint. They did something far less intrusive, less time-wasting, and made suggestions about how these people could manage their difficulties and come and report back to us in 6 months. I hope we will go a similar route, because I really don't see why the Parliament of South Africa should be seized with all these petty complaints. There are a few of real substance, and the SAFA is seized with them, and those we should make a deal with. But we have taken no basic decision. I do like the sound of what the Honourable Jeffrey proposes, that on Tuesday, because her term is expired, we hear Ms. Shai, and I'm sure you will discipline the proceedings of me. And I like what Ms. Harper says, invite the public protector to send a representative.
Thanks, Chair. I do support what has already been alluded, the idea of inviting the deputy to come over. And Russia actually has an opportunity of engaging her. And also to get an idea from her as to what is really going on with all of these allegations that have been made. If it was just an ordinary staff member that was actually getting these complaints and allegations, maybe you would actually say it's petty. But the position that she was, it's a position that is serious within an institution, that's a position. The necessary dignity an authority like this, the Office of the Public Protector, we really need to take it serious. And also, I think this borders on the instability that is generally found in Chapter 9 institutions. And maybe we shouldn't actually just let it go now. Let's talk to her, because this is our last opportunity. And also because of the fact that she's leaving, I guess, in a way, it's almost an exit report. But there shouldn't be anything hanging in future. And they're saying, you know, the deputy is the one that was actually responsible for XYZ. When actual fact, we had an opportunity of engaging the deputy. It's not only going to be about the pettiness of the allegations, it will be also about the work that we had actually commissioned her to do for this Chapter 9 institution. And I
support
Tuesday for meeting with
them. Thanks. So first, I think we do need to respond to the unfair conclusions in the Mail and Guardian article. I think we're all unanimous about that. I previously indicated my concern about getting right down into all these issues and getting bogged down. And so we really need your guidance as to what degree one deals with the real issues, the systemic issues, as opposed to getting caught up trying to deal with petty issues and to in and fro in, this one says this, what do you say to that, this one says that, what do you say to that. One also needs to bear in mind what role the unit in the Speaker's Office, the Chapter 9 unit, should play. Clearly, Public Protector accounts to us as this committee, but there might be a way that that unit can also sit. I'm just very concerned about it in. We've got so much work, and to get so involved in trying to decide, how do you decide? You have hearings, you cross-examinations, you make fact findings. It's very, very difficult, but at the end of the day, we've got to play a role in trying to deal with systemic issues. And I think what the Honourable Smith said about the Heather Asmore approach is very useful. So we just need, with that caveat, start on Tuesday, but again, one's got to be so careful. How far do you allow, and to what degree then does the Public Protector have to respond to every little item? So it's useful that the Public Protector should have someone here as well, because if we ask her to respond, she needs to have someone here that can report to her as to what to respond on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. Just stated some of my concerns, because indeed we do have this unit that is in the Office of the Deputy Speaker, which I believe will be seized with some of these kinds of matters. But nonetheless, because of the fact that indeed it is leaving, then we need to ensure that we tie up any such loose ends where their own activities are concerned. Then indeed we need to hold this kind of meeting. But I was also going to be asking Chair as to what are our own intention in terms of dealing with this particular presentation as a committee. I'm concerned about us being driven by the media in doing what we are supposed to be doing. We seem to be responding now to what the Mail and Guardian article says. And I was going to suggest, if it were not for the fact that seems as if everybody has agreed that let's call them to a meeting next week, That kind of article should mandate you to write a response explaining the true position and doing away with the lies that are being shorted in that particular article. I thought I should just make those comments, but I am not against having called together with the public sector for which we need.
Chairperson, I'm just concerned that we might be setting a wrong precedent. There are many other institutions, Chapter 9 institutions, that we also to oversight with, and if we now hear complaints from the one, what stops the other ones from also not levying all sorts of complaints? And I fully agree, some of them were really just a waste of time reading through. It was just plain petty at times. So I'm concerned about the fact that we might want to set a precedent, and I agree with Edgar Lumisa, what is the purpose, what is really going to be the purpose of us having the meeting in whatever form on Tuesday? And then I just want to say, it doesn't mean that if information is leaked, that we mustn't treat it as confidential. We must still, and we mustn't be pushed by the media, but But the information, as far as I know, is all confidential, and we must treat it in that manner. I also think before we go into that meeting, irrespective of what form it's going to take, that we must limit ourselves to the issues. I also don't think that the issues, all of the issues that were raised in the document of the Deputy Public Protector, that we need to go through all of that. So we need to agree before that time what issues are we really talking about. And I don't know whether we want to do it here now. So those are basically my main concerns with regards to that.
Really, in response to Ms. Adams, I mean, let's remember that the anonymous complaint was referred to the Speaker by the Public Protector after, it seems, I think, trying to have engaged with the Chair of SCPA. The Speaker then referred the complaint to us, so we have to deal with it. In some form or another, but we have to give consideration to it and report back to the House. So that's the distinction between this matter and any other matter. We are not generally an open door. The only other matter that we've got in St. is the Human Rights Commission. But we're not an open door as far as any other complaints coming from that. But that's basically the issue. Yeah, we have to dispose of it. We have to consider it and dispose of it.
I completely agree with Adam as far as limiting the issues of concern, and perhaps we could even maybe just do it even if it's via email by saying, man, if we can just say we believe to be the main issues that need to help. The media's going to get all that. Why? Are they bugging us there? Well, yeah, because I mean, I'm not in a position. Well, they can, I really am. But I mean, I don't have a doctor taking with me right now to remember all the issues. There were two or three, I think, that were questions. Yeah. So if we could, even if we just do it before the meeting, maybe a little bit, too, half an hour before.
No, by Monday email.
Is that all fine? Thanks. Yes, I completely agree with that. There's a lot of the stuff we don't need to.
All right, honourable members, I'm glad we've done this little exercise. I had a whole lot of people bugging me over the weekend.
Did they have the permission of the inspector of telephone and tapping session?
No, really, they were on my neck. Why are you arbitrary? I had to say, but you know, you need to know all the facts before you raise the accusation. Well, either people weren't aware that she had asked for it, because she did. I mean, we said this time and time again, that when we received the anonymous letter, we took it and threw it to the nearest waste. Some of you confirmed that. That's certainly what happened. But when Advocate Madame Seller herself wrote to the Speaker and met with him, the Speaker in turn referred it to us. Now, what do? We go back to the Speaker and say, sorry, we can't do this. We'd be in serious trouble. Now, why the Mail and Guardian chose to ignore that little fact is for them to explain. Yes, it's true that the question of sexual harassment occurred, or allegedly occurred, in the South African Human Rights Commission, or beg your pardon, in the Public Sector, I'm confusing my Chapter 9 institutions now, was held behind closed doors. I'm not aware of the circumstances that led to that ad hoc committee taking that decision. But because they took that decision then, is that binding on us?
Yes.
No, it isn't. But clearly, that is what the Mail and Guardian is saying. They are saying, well, Carla Rasmus' ad hoc committee met behind closed doors. You must do the same. I know they're being prompted. Yes, exactly. And so even there was even a demand that be heard not by this committee, but by an health committee. And to the Speaker's credit, he refused that request and referred it to us. So there we have it. For the Mail and Guardian, the champions of the right to know, I want people to hear very clearly what I'm saying now. Media freedom and transparency, to advocate and call for a closed year because it involves the Public Protector, beggars anyway. I mean, I thought I'd heard all in this place. I'm 64 this year, and I really thought I'd heard it all. Well, I haven't. I mean, this is the male and guardian people. You know, I don't want to draw a distinction between male and guardian and other media houses, but we know the role they played. And so when I read this, I just couldn't believe it. What is behind it, really? All right, first, Ms. Schopistol, and then Ms.
Thank you, Chairman. Sorry for being a little bit late. I just want us to be conscious to this fact that the South African media writes what they want. That is a reality that we must live with. It does not matter what we are going to do. It does not matter the information, the explanations that you are going to say, Che, I'm telling you, I'm sitting here. They will respond to you. They will write what they want, what they think suits them for the moment. Period.
I just wanted to fall directly upon you. Let's draw the distinction that is usually observed between reportage and comment. When we say the Mail and Guardian took this approach, it is not that the newspaper under its mastheads took this editorial position. It is that a particular full-page report worked on this assumption. But in as much as the Mail and Guardian practices still frequently and mostly advocacy journalism, it is that reportage was not a report in which this side was put and the other side was put. It was a piece of advocacy. That's fine. It's a legitimate form of journalism. But then we may not be expected, and therefore, you see, I think that you're not entirely wrong in saying the Mail and Guardian did this, because the Mail and Guardian published a piece of full-page advocacy, and so therefore you're wrong. Just for the sake of whatever may now follow, let's draw the classic distinction between reportage and comment and say, oh, we are aware this was not comment, it was not editorial, it was reportage, but it is reportage that took a certain position, disregarded certain facts, and it's on that basis that we say the Mail and Guardian did this, and that we are not particularly happy with what they did. But we're politicians, we're used to this sort of stuff, we just feel that we must place on record.
I mean, interestingly enough, the journalist did actually call me before that article was published and asked me if we had decided on a process, and I informed her that we hadn't, so it was also interesting, and that was not referred to at all as well. But the point is, and I also think that for the benefit of journalists here and any members of the public, the public sector is not in a biases advisory and not in a way that could be interpreted incorrectly, but a holy cow. I mean, it's not, he is not accountable to anybody. And
that's very nice.
I like her. She's very nice, and I'm not reading it in that way, but I'm just saying it for expression. She's not untouchable.
Yes.
She has, and there are some serious allegations that have been made, and it's legitimate that we actually exercise our oversight role and get answers to those questions. And I think people need to understand that also. It doesn't mean we're roasting her just because we're asking questions.
Well, it certainly sounds like we're not allowed to ask a question. I think that's what's being advocated.
People disregard anything being published.
Yes.
In newspaper is toilet cups.
You might not jump.
Thank you. My main worry is the level of importance we sometimes actually put into a newspaper article. Newspapers have got the ability to write whatever they like. But at the same time, our kinds of discussions should be based on facts that we have before us in Parliament. If we're going to take so many minutes really debating issues and also looking at how to respond to the discussion, for me personally, it's wonderful. Today's event is one of the times to be present. Maybe we should have a newspaper session. Where we can look at who is saying what in the newspaper. And my other major one is, why has this impression been created that as a committee, and I'm not sure whether as a committee across political parties, we have an attitude towards the public sector? Who is going to benefit from creating such an impression and putting it in the media? That is why it's really personally is running for me.
Yeah. All right. think that's enough for now. Now, honourable members, let's move on to criminal procedure amendment. We were at the point where two justices had addressed that. The question is the best of us, and I was waiting for you to come
back.
Yes, thank you very much. Yes, as I said, I wasn't too sure what the committee wanted to do. We've heard the two judges and we've heard the Legal Aid South Africa. We sat together and tried to put some thoughts together. We've got a document. We didn't want to be presumptuous and hand it out because there haven't really been deliberations as such on the board. But maybe just a few points that I could raise. Just to remind members that the bill is in line with the proposal that comes from the SCA. They all supported all the judges, and I would assume that in supporting this and discussing it, when they were approached for comments on the bill, they were given thought to constitutionality. Judge Newton came and told us about the current implications of the legal position that is accused people or petitioners wait for up to 2 years in general for the records to arrive before they can do anything, and then invariably these records are necessary to be read or are not read. Judge Kachalia mentioned even that there was a case, and I cannot remember whether he said 8 or 12 years, so there have been instances where it's extreme. We can't, the judges also pointed out that we can't really rely on costs and systemic problems. But what Judge Newton said now in certain terms that the implications are dire for the accused persons, and I think that should be our motivating or guidance that we should be looking at. So it's in the interest of the accused people, speedy justice, finality, reaching finality as soon as possible. So I think there's still very much justification for the bill, possibly as it is now. Maybe the committee wants to debate that, or possibly in an amended form, and that's where we put our heads together. We heard what Lee Laid, South Africa, came and said in the beginning. Mr. Hindock was saying that they were opposed to the bill in toto, that's the impression I got, but then the committee questioned him. I think he changed tack a bit, and he highlighted some instances where there were some circumstances about which he was very concerned. Is where you have an unrepresented accused, and that would be just admit that or concede that that would be the exception, or whether where the accused person hasn't really had a chance of reappraisal up until that stage. So he still has concerns, and I think valid concerns. So if we want to have a look at the bill or an amended form of the bill, we put our heads together. The bill as it is now says. Says that the full record must be made available in all cases except in the following, and that list where the accused was legally represented, the accused and the prosecuting authority agree if the prospective appeal is against the sentence only, if the petition relates solely to an application for condemnation, then the full record doesn't have to be made available. And we were wondering, in the light of what the judges have said and in the light of what Mr. Lindemark has said, where we can't turn it around on its head and say when the full record of appeal, in what circumstances should the full record of appeal be made available, full record of proceedings be made available. And that sort of comes back to the suggestion that Mr. Jeffrey made, I think, when we last met. So that you would set out and say you would, rather than having amending 316.10 by adding a provisor, is to amend section 316.10(c) to the following effect. It would read as follows: there wouldn't be a provisor. When receiving notice of a petition as provided for in subsection 9, the registrar shall forward to the registrar of the Supreme Court of Appeal copies of the application that was refused, b, the reasons for refusing application or applications, and C, the record of the proceedings in the High Court in respect of which the application was refused. And then we add, if, and these are just some criteria that we thought of, if the accused was not legally represented at the trial, or if the accused is not legally represented for the purposes of the petition, or if the judge is considering the petition in the interest of justice request it, or only a portion thereof if they so request. So we give the judges, the petitioning judges, that discretion to call for it if it's in the interest of justice. We might want to tinker with the wording, but that I think is in line with what Mr. Jeffrey said. And I think we put it like that, I don't think it would be offensive. A Judge Nugent said, if we as a committee say the judges must do this, they would find it offensive. But if we swing it this way around, I don't think there could be that allegation of offensiveness. So, Chair, I think that is what we've come up with. I think in a nutshell, that's
what that in some written
terms? We have. So, if you do want to have a look at them, you can make the
Yes.
Chair, no, I think Judge Nugent was saying that the bill shouldn't be in such a form as to create obligations and tell judges what they must do, but the way it's being said now is that the record of proceedings in the High Court must be made available if the judge is considering the petition in the interest of justice requested.
Requested or only a portion thereof.
Or only a portion thereof.
Remember Judge Nugent says, quite often we just want one or two pages in the report.
This is the law of words. I agree that there is a problem with 316.10c, and that clause should actually be amended. I had a different amendment, and I'll tell you how my amendment reads. If you look at 10 where 10 starts, it's when receiving notice of a petition as provided for in subsection 9, the registrar shall, if requested by the judge of the Supreme Court of Appeal, forward to the Registrar of the Supreme Court of Appeal copies of A, application or applications that were refused, B, the reason for refusing the application or applications, and C, call for any further information from the judge who refused the application in question or from the judge who presided at the trial to which the application relates, as the case may be. And C is really 12A. So that is just copying and pasting. Because then we give the opportunity to the judge to decide what is important and what is not important for the appeal, and also not delay the matter further. And because obviously if he feels that, or she feels that, we only need two pages, then she would cover that under any further information instead of making specific reference to the record.
Mr. Chair, I don't hear there anything about that if he's not legally represented for the purpose of the petition, and I think that's important to pursue. I like Mr. Bassett's draft, I must be honest. I think it covers the legal aid concern, I think it covers our concern, which also I was concerned about regarding if someone isn't represented at the time of the petition, and I think this looks like the alternative is a good suggestion.
Chair, maybe Lizelle can circulate her version as well that you can have a look at. But I do think Mr. Bassett, and anyone can look at that, but it seems very positive what he's recommended. I have full sympathy for the situation facing ACA judges. I think that we need to assist them. The Legal Aid Board, Legal Aid South Africa issued, and I think this will cover the issue of the unrepresented persons that the Legal Aid South Africa was concerned about. I think not only will this assist in the delays of those that are waiting trial, but costs are an issue. They are an issue and they are in memorandum to the bill, so there's no concern about not considering the costs aspect. It is in the memorandum to the bill, so the executive is already thought fit to alert us to cost implications. So I think we need to be mindful that this will result in a saving, but it gives the discretion to the judge to request a record or not. It's a very narrow ambit of petitions for leave to appeal. Very narrow, only one sentence, and it's very, very narrow. So I think that it's something that we should support and push it through as quick as possible. Thank you. And if the legal aid South Africa is still unhappy, they of course can go to the Constitutional Court and test it if they really want to. But I think this covers, and I think we must be mindful of the bit of information about that other judgment, what the judge has indicated. I don't know to what degree we should take judicial knowledge of that, but that it was never intended that it would cause a systemic problem. Judicial nurses. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think Mr. Vance's alternative phrasing is quite soft. It's not going to offend us, not at all. But I also feel that Lizelle's alteration should also be looked at, because it puts the shall on the registrar and not on the judge, and I think they will find it acceptable.
No, I mean, I had it as well as the Shingo case, and it was very specifically related to the trial within the trial. It wasn't saying that the court has to have the record in all circumstances, but in that particular case, it was quite clear from the case and the record of the proceedings and the judgment that there was a trial within a trial relating to the confession that wasn't picked up by the ADA, and they actually admitted here that it was their fault. It was a mistake on the part of the judges, and that is not going to be solved by having the record. So I don't think that the case precludes us from making the amendment like this. But it's a factual situation in a particular case relating to certain circumstances that was relevant. And I think that's the point. If they don't pick up something that they should have picked up from the record and then asked for it, that was the critical point. I felt that they hadn't had a fair trial. And that wasn't related to the fact that they didn't have the record, but the fact that they didn't call for that particular part of the record dealing with the trial in the trial. And I don't think that the case is a problem either. The other issue that we are concerned with was retrospectivity, and I think that was satisfactorily dealt with, that it's not going to be prejudicial to anybody, and I don't think that should be a problem.
I think obviously the alternative on this Bassett's document we're going for or more interested in, because that does include the accused not being legally represented for purposes of the petition. I don't know, the issue in the alternative of the accused and the prosecution agreeing is not included. Okay, I don't know, I mean, whether that should not be there. Not legally represented at the trial. I'm talking about. I'm talking about under A. Yes. I mean the main bill. I mean the original.
The original.
Yeah. Rome 2. If the accused and prosecutorial authority agree thereto. So it's a question of whether that should be. And what about also the thing that was offensive and tough, where the record, a judgment does not disclose all the reasons. Well, you'd be clear that I mean that was the thing in Shinga, that the judgment did not disclose the relevant reasons, they just sort of missed it. But maybe we could, Chair, like take the, I think this bill isn't going to the House this year because the door closed yesterday, although it would be useful if we could finalise the bill so that we don't have to reconsider it, re-remember it in January or February. So it would be useful if the things could be circulated. Maybe we can look at it again on Tuesday. Just with and also see the other proposal. But just on that other proposal,
Yeah, Lizelle and Ms. Adams' proposal. But just on that one, I mean, there were references to, judges, I think from the lower court or something, I may be wrong. And remember that the original trial that's gone up to the FCA could have been the Madge Court. So when Lizelle, when you do that, that you should just remember to include that.
Thank you. When FCA does its race, yeah, there were a number of concerns that were raised, and my question to Mr. Tripp is whether the amendment does take that into consideration. Remember, they were worried about rewriting or transcribing information that was supposed to cause IRS to pay, and the loads of documentation. This would actually be very difficult for them to continue with their work. Though from our side, what we need to emphasize is that because errors do happen, we need to have the solution. So I don't know whether this amendment has actually taken into consideration the comments from the judges. And if yes, I want to answer.
Yes, I would argue that the board does take into consideration that it does. I think the effect of that is going to be that the number of cases in which the record of proceedings are going to be required is going to be reduced quite considerably. The judges will call for the full record in cases where, only in cases where they feel that it is correct. But I'm not too sure whether I'm answering the question that that was asked. What I didn't go through when I was doing the briefing, paragraph C, we will still retain paragraph C of subsection 12
of
the bill as it is now, with one difference. Paul, if you have a look at the bill as it is now, that paragraph, we recommend that paragraph C be inserted in subparagraph 12. And subclause 12 reads, the judges considering petition may A. call for further information, B. in exceptional circumstances order that the application be argued before them at a specified time and place, and C. is called for a copy of the record of the proceedings if it was not submitted in terms of subsection 10C. So we suggest that be retained, but that we add some words in there, which we have done in our draft, call for a copy of the record or portion of the record of the proceedings if it was not submitted in terms of subsection 10C. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention as well.
Chairperson, I just have some crazy thinking now. If you talk about a portion of the record, the judge asks for a portion of the record, we assume, I mean, the trial has taken place, the trial was recorded, it has not been transcribed yet. The issue was the transcription, it takes time and it's a cost factor. Now, if you as a judge ask for a portion of the record, are you not supposed to know already what is in the record? I mean, what pages? Or am I crazy? Am I?
Should summarize the evidence. And in the evidence, the judge, the appeal judges could see something that they're not sure about, and they want then the portion of the record dealing with Ms. Adams' evidence, because they couldn't figure out how the judge, the magistrate, and the court of quo could have reached a decision based on your evidence. Yeah, so it'd be basically, I presume that the Smellers equivalent was mark the tapes, and it would then be Ms. Adams' evidence, and then that can be transcribed. Or in the case of Shinga, that it's a trial within a trial, and they say we want the record of that. And then, the retrospectivity thing, I mean, I think, yeah. I look, I would suggest this because I can just, I mean, I think we've been through this too many times. If it passed the bill in the committee and it gets onto the order paper, even if the House has stopped sitting, then the bill will have to be revived, won't it? No, that's only the motions. But anyway, but the point needs to be, Chair, is that at our first meeting next year, we can just debate, we can just vote on the bill. I just don't want us to be in a situation where we've still got to apply our mind and then we remember and ask questions about all the things that we'd asked before because we've forgotten, and all of us do that. Marshmallows, you know, with the roast, if there's going to be roast.
But I don't think it's on that.